League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
If you were just tuning in, why would we play that song? Well, Hulk Hogan has passed away at 71, and during the break, Sean said, complicated history? It's not that complicated. As a wrestler, was one of the greatest. As a human being, Not that great. Hulk Hogan's had a, and this is not even the political side of it. You can take that for whatever you want. But he has said and done some things that aren't great. And I'm not into celebrating, like actually, thank God someone's dead, which is going on online right now. But you can tell by the reaction of some people that the Hulk outside of the ring wasn't the greatest. And you can find anything. I'm sure in the eulogies that'll be written by, and the retrospectives that will be written, there'll be a list of things that he has done that kind of tainted what was at one point like a, 100%? Probably not 100%. I'm sure there were some Ultimate Warrior fans that didn't like him. But
it was strictly about the...
Well, wrestling, yeah.
About
wrestling. But overall, at one point, I didn't hear a bad word said about him. Then he stopped wrestling. Or at least we found out things about him outside of wrestling that changed the perspective. But Hulk Hogan passes away at 71 years old. All right. Sean, I think Sean's looking up.
I'm looking for a eulogy.
I don't know if those are out there yet, but I'm sure they will be out there, and then we'll have a rundown of all the things that Hulk Hogan has done.
I think it has to start with WWE legend or WWF legend.
I think that's how it'll begin, yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be how his presence changed wrestling.
And then like second, third paragraph, you get into
some of the reality.
In 2013, that's whatever year it was.
Yeah, when he no longer was a featured performer. And we stopped talking about him as a wrestler and start talking about the reality show stuff around him and all the other things that led to a less than stellar reputation in the final years of his life. So there it is. Hulkamania. Now think of the past. Okay, we'll get to some more text and stuff here. D'Amico Ryans talks about what he likes about the office. We heard from CJ about how he's going to have more control. And that is something we know it's been reported that he pushed for, and I think it's something he said he really, really wanted. Well, here's D'Amico Ryans on what he likes about the Nick Kaley offense.
What excites me most about Kaley's offense is that it's evolving and it's being tailored toward the Houston Texans and the guys that we have on our roster. So what excites me the most is not just a copy and paste from other places that he's been, and he's been very successful at other places, but he's been very, very thorough with the installation process of where do we want to put our guys, what position, what's the best spot for our guys to be in. So you look at it through that lens, it's going to be about the Houston Texans, and that's what I love most about the offense is him being able to be adaptable and put our guys.
I don't know where Nick Kaley has been very successful in this job, the one he has now. I know he was the pass game coordinator for the Rams, but the job he's going to have now is one he's never done before, not on any level. And he was more of a defensive assistant in his first couple coaching jobs back in college. He was on the other side of the ball. And as he made it to his way to the NFL, he worked his way up in the Patriots organization. And then once he moved on to the Rams, so Has he been a part of some successful offenses? Sure. But he's never done what he's going to do this time around. So I know why his head coach is going to believe on him. He better. He just made the hire. But I think the one thing you take away from it is that it isn't going to be plug players into things I think they should do. We're going to, at least according to D'Amico, we're going to build an offense that fits the players. And, you know, we've heard that quite a bit. We hear it at every presser for a new coach for the most part. Players over plays, all the things that get people excited. But there are always certain things an offense will always do. Like D'Amico Ryan's talked about what he wanted from an offense when this decision was being made. There was some thought that CJ may have wanted a more Ohio State type offense where he's always in the shotgun. It's more spread. It's more you might call power spread. That's maybe a term used for it. D'Amico Ryan's took that into consideration. Also, D'Amico wanted more under center stuff. He wanted to run the football from under center. That was something that appealed to him. And if you think back to what the Rams do, there's been some differences. When Jared Goff was there, they were under center play action stuff, hard play actions to get Jared Goff a clearer view in the intermediate into the intermediate routes that he was going to throw into. That's what that's happening in Detroit. Well, at least it did with Ben Johnson. We'll see what Detroit offense looks like now that Ben Johnson is gone. Under Matthew Stafford played quite a bit out of the shotgun. No, there's still some under center stuff. It wasn't exclusively out of shotgun, but they made an offense that fit Matthew Stafford as opposed to the one that Jared Goff played under Sean McVay. We'll see what best suits CJ. And according to D'Amico, they're going to do things that fit all their personnel the best. And we won't have any real answers probably until halfway through the year. But the coach is excited about it. So if you trust D'Amico, I guess you should be as well. But once we start to analyze pressers, I could go point across the league and hear the same stuff from every coach who's made a new hire.
Even D'Amico Ryan's, like, he was, you know who is very positive of last season?
I did bring it up on the morning show. What did he say about Bobby Slowick?
What did he say about Bobby Slowick in, like, week 11? Not even first day of training camp. Just, like, after the Jets game. Like, it was overall still positive. Now, that is just, like, what he said in a press conference scenario. Probably not what he actually felt. But, I mean, it's the same principle of, like, everyone this time of the year is excited about their new offensive coordinator hire.
You got a real problem if you're not.
Yeah. So, listen, like I said earlier, not being Bobby Slowick, step in the right direction. Just, hey, at least be different.
Already a check mark in your favor.
Don't even really have to be that much better. Just be different. Well, just the weaknesses not be as obvious to people sitting on their couch watching the games on TV.
Well, listen to Nico Collins here, because he said something and then he kind of caught himself. Because the expectation is this offense will be different than what we saw under Bobby Slowick. We'll wrap up the Texans sound with this. Here is Nico Collins on what this offense is going to do for him and the other playmakers.
Shoot. I feel like it's pretty much like the same, you know. Not the same, but it gets the playmakers the ball, you know. Same with this offense, man. Like, you get the ball in your hand, go do something with it, you know. And I feel like Nick really making that an emphasis, like, that yet. Yeah, it's a big thing, you know. So I feel like as a receiver group, as an offensive unit, that's what you want to do and get the ball in hand, go score. Because I ain't trying to be on that field 10 plays. Trying to be one and done, you know. So, but it's a great opportunity to go out there, man. Just have fun.
So if we just take the best receiver on the team's insight, guys are going to get the opportunity in the open field. And that was kind of a tenet of the 49ers offense, where a lot of it was built off of what happens after you get the ball in a player's hands. And that's why Debo still has a reputation of being a big-time playmaker, is because of all the opportunities he got on the run. And, of course, there isn't a real Debo here, but you have a big receiver, Nico Collins. If Jaden Higgins is your other outside guy, you have another big receiver. And then how they distribute slot snaps when it comes to Noel And Kirk is yet to be seen. But first day sound from the Texans, all positive about Nick Caley. And it'll probably stay that way until there's a reason for it not to, like week four or whatever. Or maybe it's week one when Kobe Turner and the rest of the Rams are after them and the rest of the offensive line. But mm-hmm. so far, nothing but
like,
good things.
They're like, we know what this guy does.
Thank you that you said that. I can't wait for that storyline because it's very predictable. They're going to ask.
Revenge game.
They're going to. Why? He didn't get fired. They're going to ask the Rams about Nick Caley. Nick Caley will be asked about the Rams.
Yep.
And the back and forth about who has the advantage will go forward. And someone very reasonable will say, well, I'm sure he'll have different things in store. But, you know, we know him. He knows us, so on and so forth. That will be leaned into greatly in week one. Just get ready for it.
Yeah.
Get ready for the Nick Caley versus the Rams story to be a thing. I'm less concerned about that and more about
how he actually performs.
And how Jared Verse is going to deal with the Texans offensive line and vice versa.
Oh, man. It just set in that I'm going to have to watch this offensive line again.
It's different, though.
The people are different, yes.
Different spots even for the guys who are returning.
Yeah, yeah.
Titus Howard's playing left, right guard now.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Mm-hmm. But then when you say Jared Verse is going to line up on the other side, I'm like, don't love that.
They got to prove themselves. That's the most unproven unit on the team.
Yes, by far.
By far. Middle linebacker, but your inside linebackers, there's some questions about who's going to play the majority of the snaps. EJ Speed is here. Yeah. Christian Harris disappeared for the most part last season after having at least a great wild card game, and people thought Christian Harris was going to take a step. He was injured to start the year, and when he came back, there wasn't a lot there. So there's some questions with your inside linebackers, Azeez Al-Shaair. That's a unit that probably is the worst unit on the defensive side of the ball because we had to talk about the interior defensive linemen, and we probably aren't as low on them as the ESPN was when they ranked them as the biggest question mark for the team. Even with the offensive line still available to pick, I don't think as lowly of the defensive interior as ESPN did. So I think linebacker is probably a bigger problem. But other than that, offensive line reigns supreme. All right. We'll go to break with that. If you want to join the show, you certainly can. 713-780-3776. It is list season. So will Sean actually go with the most profitable programs in all of college, not just college football, but college sports? We already know who number one would be. So maybe he has a different list. We'll get to our daily segment, Listsizen, when we come back. All right, Sean. You informed me during the break that you will not lean into most profitable college programs in the country.
It's like not opinions, and B, even the like quote unquote facts of it, it's all very hazy.
Of course,
it's just valuations.
Sure,
of things that aren't for sale.
So you do have a different list. Is it college football related? Or are we going in a different place?
It is college football related. It is from week to week. CFB, which on this computer, it's signed into the ESPN 97.5 account, which is dangerous. But it also gives me good insights like this account is only followed by one person that follows ESPN 97.5.
Okay.
And that person is John Cena.
Interesting.
That John Cena.
So John Cena follows the station account.
And he also follows week-to-week CFB, who brings us this list.
Did not know John Cena was a college football fan. Now I do.
He follows a million people on.
Is he just a follow back guy? If you follow him, there's a real chance he'll follow you.
At one point he was, but I think now he has.
He's got
15 million followers.
That's probably not what he's doing.
But this list is not John Cena related in any way. I just thought it was interesting. It is the first time CFP candidates for this season.
Okay.
So the teams that this season are most likely to make their first college football playoff appearance. This is all Power 5 teams.
I'm going to guess Ole Miss being on the list.
Ole Miss, are they on the list? They are not on the list.
Wow. Lane Kiffin ain't going to like that.
No.
So that's my one guess. Yes. Wrong on that. So let's go through the list.
Wait. Ole Miss is 10th.
Okay. They are. So they're 10th most likely, or is it ranked by likelihood?
I believe it's ranked by likely, yes.
Okay. So who is the most likely, according to this list, to make their first appearance in the college football playoff?
The Texas Tech Red Raiders.
Texas Tech getting a lot of hype. They're spending money. They're throwing money around to gain talent. And the Big 12, you would say, not the toughest conference to make your way through.
Of
what we consider the Big Four, maybe they're ahead of the ACC, but
definitely easier to win.
Yes,
for 15 teams,
sure.
to talk themselves into winning that. I assume this is mainly because if they win the Big 12, they're in. Boom. A lot of these other teams would either it's harder for them to win the SEC or Big Ten, or they'll have to be at large. Number two, another Texas school, Texas A&M.
They were two games away because they would have had to beat Texas and then go and beat Georgia in the was it Georgia?
Yes.
Yeah, Georgia in the SEC title game. So I don't know how it would have worked out.
I think Georgia was in no matter what.
Yeah. So they were on the cusp. They could not win the game at home. They'll have Marcel Reed back. It's a full year starting. Mike Elko in his second year.
Yep.
So Texas A&M, no matter what they do on the field, continues to recruit very well. So that roster is going to be stacked with talent. We know at one point they had what many people considered the best class in the history of recruiting, and then a lot of those guys left, like Evan Stewart is now an Oregon Duck. And, of course, Shamar Stewart, who I think was part of that class, is now – well, he's kind of a Bengal. I'm not sure.
He was drafted by the Bengals.
Yes, he was drafted by the Bengals. So recruiting doesn't always lead to success. Yeah. A&M can be first in line to say, yes, you're correct. And speaking of A&M, before we move on with the list, Sean, you are in a Texas group chat, right?
Yes.
Would the people in that group chat use the recent news about Texas A&M's mascot to make jokes, or would they stay away from it? Do you know the recent news?
Yes, and it's been nothing but respectful.
Yeah, if you don't know. If you don't know, the border collie that is Reveille had an eye removed due to glaucoma. So the Aggies now have a one-eyed mascot, and her official title or unofficial title is the First Lady of Aggieland, which when a dog is your First Lady, it's a little tough not to have jokes made about you. If you want to lean into that, lean into it. This is not about the student body at A&M at all. It's just right there for people to make jokes. Has your group chat responded to that news in a respectful tone?
Nothing but respect.
Ah, seems sarcastic from you.
No.
That they now have. It would be fun.
I mean, they better put an eye patch on that dog.
They're not putting an eye patch on the dog. They're...
What, a glass eye?
I don't know that they would put...
In the press release, it said that Reveille is expected to make... it was a successful surgery.
That's good to know.
And she'll be back to her duties in the fall.
What are Reveille's duties? Just being a dog?
Yeah. Being the First Lady of Aggie.
I'm sure she makes appearances.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the football games.
Is that all?
That's all that I care about. I don't care about if... But if she's at a booster event.
I don't know. Her returning to her duties. Okay. But
eye patch.
I don't think they're putting an eye patch on the dog. If Texas Tech had a dog.
Yeah.
As a mascot, you put a patch on the Red Raider.
On the horse?
Yeah,
the
horse has to ride. You can't do that. The horse has to actually gallop on the football field. You can't do that. But if for whatever reason they're because I don't know why Reveille's a border collie's the mascot for the Aggies.
I'm sure there's a Wikipedia I'm not page looking that's it up. Very long.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I don't care that much. But as far as if the Red Raiders had chosen a dog for their mascot, considering Mike Leach and the Pirate stuff, you could put a patch on the dog.
I feel like a lot of teams, not just because of Mike Leach, but just a lot of teams would just be like, hell yeah, let's do it. Like LSU would be like, let's put an eye patch on the tiger.
Oh, Mike, how are you gonna get it? How are you gonna get that tiger to allow you to put a patch on? You're gonna have to trank the tiger and throw a patch on him.
Boom! You just got it.
Okay. I don't know their policy on what they will and won't do.
Another team that could put the eye patch on their mascot, and also is number three on this list, is the Florida Gators. Third most likely team to make their first college football playoff.
You want to do a list of most difficult mascots, real life mascots with a patch on? Now,
what if we just interweave that with the teams on here? Because, I realize there's not much to say about a lot of these teams that's like, can Florida go 10-2?
Probably.
Or go 9-3 and complain enough to get in? Maybe.
It's a possibility. Well, we went through Florida's schedule, what was it, yesterday?
Yeah.
They could very well be 2-2. Early, they go on the road to a couple tough spots. It could be rough for them to start.
The Illinois Fighting Illini.
They were pretty good all of last year.
10-3, I want to say.
I don't know how they finished, but that's.
I know they won their bowl. I think they're 9-3.
Maybe they take Indiana's spot as the other Big Ten team to make it. Now, Indiana only lost one game in the regular season last year, but there is a spot beyond Ohio State, Penn State, and if you want to throw in Michigan, I don't think much of Michigan this year. But if you just want to replace Indiana with Illinois, I can see that.
This is the
and Oregon, of course, is the other.
Yeah, team. The next number five is where I just go, huh? Like, it just seems early for this team, who I think is going to be pretty good, but I don't know about fifth most likely to make their first college football playoff, especially with the teams below them on this list. Georgia Tech.
I can't say anything disparaging about them because of what they've done.
Yes, but
to my team over the last two seasons. Haynes King is still around somehow.
They're ahead of honestly, probably half the Big 12 should be ahead of them because half the Big 12 can win the Big 12 and would automatically be in.
It's true. Georgia Tech has, of course, Georgia on their schedule. Which we can
that hurts their playoff.
Yeah, that hurts their chances. So I guess we're talking winning the ACC because can Georgia Tech, when you throw Georgia on the schedule,
10-2,
and then not win the ACC, which means they've had other L's, maybe two or three. Can the Georgia Tech be 9-3 and make the playoff?
No, hell no,
no,
not without beating Georgia. So
no,
yeah. So that's the one where I'm.
So they host Clemson early on. The schedule isn't too tough. They would beat Miami anyway, but they don't have Miami in the schedule this year. Syracuse was pretty good last year. Kyle McCord's not back, right?
Yeah, that's going to be Steve Angeli joint.
They're hosting former Notre Dame quarterback.
Notre Dame quarterback that came into the Penn State game.
Yeah, Georgia Tech hosting Syracuse. So the schedule's not too tough.
But that hurts them if they lose the two games.
There's not a lot on there that would say that would help them if they do drop a couple games. So I don't see that happen. Yeah. We saw the fight last year with the ACC and all the conversation. Then you have SMU make it and then get blown out like that. I don't think the ACC is going to be getting done any favors when it comes to making the playoff again, and particularly for a Georgia Tech team who doesn't have a brand that would entice people to put them in if we believe some of that plays a part. If they're not,
just know that like six of the next eight teams I say, like I think they have a better chance.
If they're not winning the conference,
exactly.
I don't know how they're making the playoff.
Number six, also a good eye patch mascot, the Baylor Bears.
I've seen a lot of juice with Baylor.
Yeah, and just to be the
Sawyer Robertson's back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We Sawyer about Robertson's that
back and I think so is their offense coordinator. If you tell me that they win the Big 12, sure.
I can see a Big 12 representative being like 9 and if you even throw in winning the Big 12 title.
Yeah.
What, 10-3?
Yeah, because I think Baylor, they have a non-conference. Oh, they play Auburn. They play Auburn in the non-conference, which, hey.
Probably if you have real.
Auburn's not on this list.
If you have real Big 12 title thoughts, you should beat Auburn.
Exactly. Number seven, also a team that should beat Auburn, South Carolina.
Yeah, they were one of the pack of three who were whining at the end of last year.
Why is Georgia Tech two spots above?
The Georgia Tech one, as I said, I've got PTSD.
I'll do it for you.
I got PTSD with Georgia Tech, but I don't understand it either. How could they be ahead of some of these teams?
I love Georgia Tech. They've provided some of the most hilarious games in recent college football history.
Yeah, it's been great, Sean. Yeah,
Haynes King, what a
still around,
a real life cowboy playing quarterback.
24 years old, Haynes King, still around. Balling.
Actually, not a cowboy, a rodeo clown, where he just gets tossed by offense or by defensive linemen 30 times a game and just gets back up.
Yeah, keeps playing.
Fantastic. But come on, guys. Number eight, one of the teams that did throw Haynes King around like a rodeo clown. Unfortunately, Haynes King got up every time. The Miami Hurricanes.
Haynes King got so beat up in that game, he couldn't really throw the football. So
didn't matter.
It didn't matter because that's how bad Miami's defensive coordinator was last year, who's now been fired. The throwing quarterback came in, and Haynes King was a running quarterback, and they still couldn't decipher enough ways to stop that particular obvious tell. That's how bad it was in that game last year, in a game Miami lost as Cam Ward got stripped. They had a chance to go down there and win that game, but he got stripped on the second play of the drive. But, yes, Miami, they have a schedule that, even with a loss or two, allows them much different than last year. They do host Notre Dame. They do host Florida. I don't know how good Florida State would be. Don't have many hopes, even though Thomas Castellano is still not backing off the stuff he said about Alabama. That's a team who could suffer a couple losses because of the schedule and still make it, but it has to be the right losses, as it always has to be. Losing to, top 10? Are they top 5 Notre Dame this yet? Well, we don't know. The rankings are not.
Notre Dame will probably be top 5.
Probably top 5 Notre Dame at home. The interesting thing about Notre Dame is they're going to have a first-time starter, and his first game is going to be, Hard Rock ain't normally a crazy place to go play a game.
Yeah, but week one.
But week one.
Prime time.
Top
it'll be good.
10-ish or so Miami on the road. That's a tough spot for any quarterback, considering the rivalry and the noise, and it's going to be a night game.
Squiggly lines on the, stadium pulse.
Sure, can't make any audibles, all that stuff. So
that's fun.
It'll be interesting how Notre Dame copes with a first-time starter. I'm sure they're just going to hand the ball to Jeremiah Love, and hopefully that works out for him.
Yeah. After Miami, it's Iowa.
Get out of here.
Yeah, they're not.
Iowa's, stop it.
Number 10, one in the group of three SEC teams complaining about not making the playoff last year, the Ole Miss Rebels. I have a hard time seeing this, I'll be honest. They didn't make it last year.
No, and they had Jackson Dart, and of course Jackson Dart started his giant career.
All that big transfer portal class. Yeah. That was way better than the transfer portal class that they got this year. It's not like they're a team that recruits high school on a level where you're like, oh, well, they depended on transfers last year. But now the high school guys are old enough that that's the talent upgrade is internal. It's just like, and I don't know. Lane Kiffin going to go 10-2 again?
So he goes to Georgia. They go – not that Oklahoma's that tough. They go to Georgia and Oklahoma back-to-back weeks. So you would – assume just by brand recognition, their toughest stretch will be at Georgia, at Oklahoma, then home in South Carolina in a 3-week span. They have LSU at home in late September. So the schedule's manageable, you would say. Could they get to 10-2? That's a schedule for a dominant SEC team is an easy 10-2, but they're Ole Miss. They're not a dominant SEC team.
Exactly what I was going to say. I was like, that is a manageable schedule for Alabama. That's not a manageable schedule for Ole Miss.
We saw them.
They didn't manage it.
They lost to Kentucky at home last year.
It's the same schedule. Or it's the same SEC schedule from last year. Just the locations.
All the games are flipped. Yeah.
So, they had that schedule last year. They had Georgia at home. They beat them.
They lost to Florida.
And they didn't make the playoff.
Yeah, they lost Florida on the road. And they got the big win against Georgia and didn't make the playoff because they couldn't beat Florida, even though they were given multiple opportunities. And now they'll have. Well, it'll be end of the year. I don't know how healthy DJ Lagway will be, but they'll be hosting DJ Lagway, a Florida team that people think will be better because of DJ Lagway. So I don't buy that one. I don't think.
Yeah.
I think Ole Miss probably should be lower on a list, maybe a top 20 likelihood of a team.
Yeah. Next three, I'll just do as a unit. to save a little bit of time, and they're all Big 12 teams. Iowa State, Kansas State, Utah.
Just pick one.
Yeah, sure.
Will Utah have a healthy quarterback this year?
Probably not. Just how things go.
Yes, that's true.
Devin Dampier, I want to say New Mexico transfer, runner. So moving up in competition, a running quarterback who isn't huge. I have my doubts.
Yeah, the 5'11 stuff's going to be tough.
Yeah. 14, Louisville. What are we doing? I guess the ACC.
They'll be able to score. They generally always can. What Brohm does there, he does a good job.
Miller Moss going to lead a team to the playoff?
That's the problem.
Okay.
Miller Moss experience, but that's the best you can kind of say about him. He had had his moments during the USC season last year.
Well,
he played tough at Michigan. They couldn't find a way to win because, hey, look, Michigan's probably going to run the ball here. USC was not give up explosive plays in the run game to Michigan. They could not do it. And they lost to Minnesota in the game they should have won last year. Yeah. And that's part of the reason, I guess, Paul Feinbaum can't stand Lincoln Riley.
Yeah,
play some sound from him yesterday on that.
And speaking of USC, they're 16.
They're in the Big Ten. They're worse than Oregon. They're not as good as Ohio State, not as good as Penn State. So that's already three better than them. And Illinois, apparently, according to the list, is better than them. So five Big Ten schools, maybe. I think that's a stretch.
Yeah.
Particularly if USC was part of that.
Oh, yeah. Missouri. Next.
Yeah, move on.
I don't know when this list came out or when they did the – I mean, this came out 2 days ago. Maybe it's a little outdated, the analytics that they run, the crack team over at Week to Week CFB. The BYU Cougars coming in at number 17. I'm just gonna say probably not.
I don't know if the guy did it or if he can name even their current quarterback, considering Resloff is now playing, or at least will play, for Tulane.
Yep.
All right. That wraps up list season. At least today's installment of that. I'm sure there will always be another list we can decipher and comment and really make fun of the author, because that's kind of how this always goes. We got a couple more segments here to go. I will give you some more information, on what's happening this week, because the guys are out actually at Cadillac Bar today, right? Is that today?
Yep. Will Kunkel, Joe George.
Will Kunkel and Joe George.
12 to 3.
Out at Cadillac Bar. You guys know.
Killer Bee is also there.
Who?
Oh, Killer Bees as well, they don't have a different lineup.
Yes, it's the same guys doing the show, 12 to 6. The guys are out at Cadillac Bar. We'll get to what you can win if you head on out there when we come back.
Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
So depending on how you feel about a city, at least a player, depending on how they feel about a city, they'll either put something out on Instagram, tweet with the notes app, whatever, and say their goodbyes. Jalen Green used a Players Tribune to say goodbye to the city of Houston. We've talked about him kind of expecting a trade, whether that was because he read media reports or people inside the organization hinted at his availability on the market. He was not surprised that they made the trade. He's not bitter, says it's part of the business, part just how it is. And he seems to be embracing being a son. There have been conflicting reports. Depending on how you see these, they come from the same person. There's a man in Phoenix known as a Phoenix Insider. He kind of knows all there is to know about the Phoenix Suns. And if you want breaking news from them, you go to him. His nickname is Gambo. But his real full name is John Gambadoro, Gambo 987. So there are a couple things from him where although he is on the team, Dylan Brooks, Devin Booker is supposed to be the Suns' point guard next year, and also Jalen Green is supposed to be their primary ball handler. Now, positionless basketball is a thing. Some teams don't even really classify anyone as a point guard if they don't have a true traditional one. So I don't know how those things come fit. Devin Booker's going to have the ball in his hand as a point guard, but Jalen Green's going to be their primary ball handler. Seems conflicting, but whatever. Jalen Green will try to continue an upward trajectory of his career in Phoenix. But he said plenty in the Players Tribune along the lines of, as I said, it's a business. He gets it, all those things. He writes about growing up in Houston, became a man here. Of course, we know he became a father as well. But in the tweet promoting the article, he wrote something along the lines of, just be ready when I drop 30 on y'all. It's all love. Now, he did do well in Phoenix Rockets matchups attacking the Suns. He did have good games against them. I'm not sure the prospect of seeing Amen Thompson for 30 plus minutes a night is something he's going to thrive with. I'm not sure Ime Udoka's defensive game planning and just the individuals who will be playing defense are going to lead to a number of 30-point nights for Jalen Green. Because if the Warriors...
I was going to say, just play him like the Warriors.
If the Warriors can completely take you out of a series, perhaps...
I'll pencil him in for 9 when he plays the Rockets.
Perhaps Ime Udoka, Royale Ivey, and the personnel will have more luck than simply allowing you to go for 30.
Other than Amin Thompson, who they have to defend Jalen Green.
You know? They don't have Dylan Brooks anymore. He's on the Suns.
Exactly. They have no wings to guard.
DFS. Hell, maybe they just employ Josh Okogie for those nights. So go out there and body Jalen Green for 30 minutes. This is all you're here for.
Can they get Pajimski on a loan to shut him down?
That's tough. That's tough.
Sorry, Jalen.
It's tough for Jalen. For a defense, the point of attack defense led by Pods. In some ways, and Gary Payton II is a pretty good defender. But either way, it's not like the Warriors were stacked with guys who should have kept you from getting what you want. Although the Rockets did tell me they set up their entire defense to stop you for 6 of the 7 games. They forgot in game 2.
They didn't have it set up then.
Yeah. For a guy who admitted that the lights were too bright in game 1.
That's why they're like, oh. Lights got him. We don't have to worry about him.
And then they just assumed the lights would keep working. I just don't know how it went from great game
you know,
to
Steve Kerr.
Okay, got it.
So I mean, I'm somewhat interested in seeing Jalen Green in a new context.
I'm mostly there for the schadenfreude. I'm mostly there to see.
Well, he's going to be the primary
ball handler, but not the point guard.
Devin Booker is going to be the point guard. Okay.
Maybe Devin Booker is just going to get the ball in Jalen Green's hands and get out of the way. Who knows? But
good.
For the rest.
Let him cook.
For anyone betting against Phoenix, it'd be great. I am looking for the schadenfreude of the possibility of Jalen Green turning into a superstar. I don't think that's a likelihood, but if it happens, it'll be funny.
Yeah.
It would be objectively funny if the only thing holding back Jalen Green was the Rockets.
Somehow.
Somehow, some way, considering all the positive things the Rockets are doing.
Considering he got 2 years of just being like, here's the ball.
As a Steven Silas. See, you can't Steven Silas. We'll blame Steven Silas for that.
But for him, it was just...
No, it's the Rockets.
Okay.
In this,
he didn't have enough room to operate.
Yes.
He had to share it with KPJ.
Been saying it for years. In the unlikelihood that he becomes a star, if it happens, in that unlikelihood, I think it will be very funny if this team on the rise is the reason he couldn't be one, and he goes to a bad team that seems like it has no direction, and he becomes the star that his second pick in the draft status would have suggested he could be.
It's kind of like what happened to Giddey this year
when he got to Chicago.
Yeah, when he got traded off of OKC and went to Chicago, where it's like, hey, he's putting up some numbers now. It's like, well, yeah, because who else is going to put up numbers? Like, we talk about, I don't know if we've talked about it, but I've definitely said this. Just like, well, every team gets to 95 points in every NBA game. Someone's got to get 25 of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, every team has a guy who's going to get 25 points a night. So Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be the 2 weeks, the patented Jalen Green 2 week stretch where he makes 60% of his 3-pointers, and it's, can you believe the Rockets gave up on this demon?
Yeah, they got Kevin Durant. I can believe it.
No, but you see all the step back threes he's making? This time it's sustainable.
Because people wouldn't have learned their lesson.
No. We did, credit to us, the January Jalen Green stuff. That's when we were like, you know, he is turning the corner, he's playing well, but he really is just making 55% of his threes as opposed to 33% of his threes, and that's the extra.
And hey, everybody, do you think he's going to shoot at that rate for the rest of the season and the rest of his career?
Do you think he's going to be the greatest shooter of all time?
Did he just turn himself into a combo of Steph, Ray, and lame them all?
Yeah.
Is he better than all those three-point shooters?
He's, and that's Damian Lillard, yes, but also can dunk.
Yes, all those things. Or is it more likely he's on a heater and things will revert back to what he's always been? But he's in Phoenix. Hopefully it goes well for him, excluding the times he plays the Rockets. If he becomes a Rocket killer, more power to him.
For
taking that on and saying, you traded me, okay, I'm going to make you pay.
Join the ranks of Buddy Hield as Rocket killers. Yeah.
I mean, Steph Curry is the ultimate Rocket killer.
He's like the Rocket, Thanos.
But as far as guys we don't expect to kill the Rockets, join Buddy Hield. Sure, if that's Mehmet what you
Okur.
Want. Sure. Yeah. Just name them all over the last 15 years of guys who play far outplay their actual talent to make a Rockets night miserable. I hope Jalen Green plays well. I don't have anything against him. I just knew the Rockets at some point. At least I believe the Rockets at some point will move on, because at some point you cannot keep diverting resources.
Yeah.
And by resources, I'm not even talking about the money. I'm just talking about the usage that he needs to get to get his numbers. I don't think that was a viable plan going forward, and they made a decision to make a move.
Yeah, it's just as simple as they need perimeter creation. And it's like, well, they have a guy who his calling card in the league is being able to score from the perimeter, and that is the specific thing that they are the worst at. That is what is holding this team back. Is like, man, imagine if they had a really good scoring two guard, and they got one. They had one in theory, and he just wasn't. He couldn't get to that level of being that guy in the playoffs. So yeah, that was the move they had to make. Is just like, well, can we upgrade that spot right there? All the other stuff kind of works. Can we upgrade that?
Yeah, they filled a big weakness, at least when it came to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that team, who has made significant moves to their rotation overall, just even we removed Jalen from the equation, which he was a big part of it. They have added guys they expect to be part of that rotation. And we'll see as we get closer and closer to the year how that all comes together. Before we go, we're minutes away from throwing it to the guys out at Cadillac Bar. The summer circuit continues at Cadillac Bar. You know what it is. We go to restaurants, the best restaurants in the greater Houston area. And the lineup from 12 to 6 is going to be at the Cadillac Bar on Shepherd. And if you head on out there, besides getting the great food and meeting the guys, you get a chance to get yourself a Power On electric bike. It's from the Power On Electric Bicycle Company. We're giving you, along with them, a chance to win two electric bikes valued at about $4,000. All you have to do is register. You go up to the promo table, put your name down, register, and now you're entered into that contest. You can do it every time you go out to one of our events as part of the summer circuit. You can only do it once per event, but as long as you make your way out there, you get a chance again to have your name in the running. So that kind of wraps it up for us today. Of course, there will be more Texans stuff to talk about tomorrow because training camp is in full force. We'll have more sound. I guess the play of the day was a pick six. Jalen Petrie picked off C.J. Stroud in 11-on-11, I believe. So Jalen Petrie, who's coming back from injury, who needs to showcase what he has. He just got a deal, so the Texans believe in him. Now it's his turn to stay healthy and kind of reward them for their belief. Because, you know, they didn't have to give him that contract considering what had been an up and down start to his career. But they like him. He's part of what should be a very good secondary. And at least on today, at least today, he got the best of CJ Stroud. All right. That music means we're done for the day. And since we're done, what does that mean, Sean?
Shred up, Stroud!
According to reports, not so much. Not today, at least. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.